Hey everyone, welcome to episode 7 of Thomas and the Bible. Today we are on chapter 28. And the way the chapter's divided up, based on the page numbers we need to cover, the last podcast was a little short, and I think this one will be a little long, but we'll see. I'm going to try to get through it as fast as humanly possible. So, chapter 28. And Isaac called Jacob, and blessed him, and charged him, and said unto him, Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Again, what did Canaan freaking do? I already have to stop it. I think I need to reiterate this, actually, because in case somebody just now decided to get this podcast, or you forget, let's go over again what exactly led to this Canaanite prejudice here. Okay. Noah, one day, it goes all the way back to Noah. Noah, after the days of the, after his ark days, his mid-70s ark phase, he got drunk, and his son Ham, he got drunk and got naked, and you know, passed out somewhere. His son Ham committed the grievous crime of seeing him. You know, totally his fault. You know, he shouldn't have been walking there and helped his naked, passed out father into his tent. Yeah. Yeah, that's, Ham should definitely be condemned for that. But it's not, so it's not even Ham's fault that what just happened. It's obviously Noah's fault. And let's remember, we're talking about the Canaanites here. We're not talking about the Hamamites. Canaan is Ham's son. So because of this completely stupid and meaningless event, which was Noah being naked and his son seeing him naked, big freaking deal. Because of that event, we have this huge prejudice against everyone who is descended from Canaan, Ham's son. I mean, okay, technically descended from Ham too, but that's not the language Noah used. Noah said, every but Canaan shall be, you know, Noah cursed Canaan, Ham's son. It's just the dumbest thing that you could possibly, it's a prejudice that defies the boundaries of stupidity. It is literally based on nothing. If you based this prejudice on skin color, it would be a step up. That's how stupid it is. There isn't even a single good Canaanite woman that Jacob could marry. There isn't just one single, you know, it's been several years, maybe hundreds of years since that. And in all the intermarriage and all the intramarriage, I don't know how that, extramarriage, you know, and all of that, there's not one Canaanite woman in all the land of Canaan that would be acceptable. Ridiculous. Okay, anyway, verse 2. Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, my mother's father, and take thee a wife from whence of the daughters of Laban, my mother's brother. And God Almighty bless thee, and make thee fruitful, and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a multitude of people. And give thee the blessing of Abraham to thee, and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger, which God gave unto Abraham. And Isaac sent away Jacob. And he went to Paddan Aram unto Laban, son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob's and Esau's mother. When Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob, and sent him away to Paddan Aram, to take him a wife from thence, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan, and that Jacob obeyed his father and his mother, and was gone to Paddan Aram. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau unto Ishmael, and took unto the wives which he had Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebahoth, to be his wife. By the way, I'm going to try to... I started this in an earlier podcast, but I may have stopped doing that. I'm going to try to paraphrase after I'm done, because I realize that this language is kind of weird, and it makes sense to me reading it for some reason, I think because I've read a lot of it, and I've experienced with it a little bit, but it might, and you know, maybe it totally makes sense to all of you, I don't know, but it when I listen to it, it's a lot harder. I think when you're not looking at it, it's hard to know exactly what's going on. So if you think that's a good idea, feel free to tell me at comments@thomasinthebible.com. If you think it's a bad idea and preferred I just blow through it and read it, then by all means, send me that email as well. So what's basically happening, I'm going to do it now until I hear otherwise. What's basically happened is Isaac told Jacob to not marry anyone from Canaan, which I covered, any of the Canaanites. I don't know if Canaan is a land, but they're called Canaanites, so. And Esau overheard this and thought, well, if he told him not to marry anyone of the Canaanites, then I'll not marry anyone of the Canaanites. So basically nothing has really happened, but just one quick event here. And Jacob went out from Beersheba, and, you know, the thrice-named Beersheba that we covered, and went toward Haran. And he lighted upon a certain place and tarried there all night because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows. Yeah, Pillow technology has come a long way since then. And lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed. And behold, a ladder. Jacob's ladder. A ladder set upon the earth. What it was leaning against, I'm not sure. But anyway. And the top of it reached to the heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord... Behold, a lot of things. The Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac, the land whereon thou liest. To thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee and thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest. And I will bring thee again unto this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. So, basically he had a dream where God told him all the land was his, and all this stuff, and made him all these promises. And this made me think of something, a thought that is really obvious. I can't believe I haven't mentioned this before. And maybe I have, I don't know, but I wonder... Back then, did they not ever think, like, something was simply a dream? Did they never just wake up and say, wow, huh, what a weird dream about God and all that stuff he's gonna give? Weird. Well, anyway, I better get breakfast going. I mean, nowadays, if you woke up and you went and told a friend or something, hey, I just had a dream and God promised me all this land and riches and my seed is going to outnumber the dust and this is awesome. I can't wait. Your friend should probably say something like, last night I dreamt that I was marrying my goldfish on a mountain of cream cheese and my dog was the pastor and then I wasn't wearing anything. My old PE teacher was laughing at me. So, should I assume that that's also going to happen in the next few days or what? You know, like, it's a dream. It doesn't... That's why they're called dreams. They're dreams. The weird crap happens all the time. If they came true all the time, then that would be something else. But it's funny to me that... These dreams... They just take it for granted that, oh, yeah, that was God. Really? Like, how would you know that that's not just you? Is there any possible way you could have a dream... Where they would say, like, yes, this is God. Like, why would you believe that that's actually God and not just your mind? You know, you always believe the dream when you're in it. And then you wake up and you say, that was the dumbest thing I've ever thought of. How did that even happen? Anyway. Moving on. Point made, I hope. And Jacob awakened out of his sleep. And he said, surely the Lord is in this place. Yeah, see? Only conclusion. And I knew it not. Oh, he knew it not. Well, the Lord's everywhere, isn't he? I don't think these people in the Old Testament actually look at God in the same way that we do now. By we, I mean people who believe in God. I really don't. And I might write something about that later. We'll see. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. And Jacob arose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put for his pillow and set it for a pillar, and poured oil upon the top of it. So, for God, for the Lord, that must have been like when your kid makes some crappy piece of thing that's supposed to be art, and you have to, like, pretend it's great and put it on the fridge. Like, Jacob's like, hey, God, look! Look what I made! Look what I made for you! God says, oh! Oh! Oh, wow! Oh, okay, looks like you took a rock and you spilled some oil on it. Wow. Well, that's really good, kid. That's, boy, yeah, you gonna keep it? You gonna put it? I don't know. What if someone else wants to use this rock? Maybe we should put it back and just, you know, let the oil do whatever oil. No. This, I made it for you. You gotta keep, there's plenty of rocks in the sea. Because that's a metaphor. There's plenty of rocks out there, and God says, you're right. No, I'll keep it. I'll put it somewhere. I'll find, yeah. Because that's what Jacob did. No one told him to do this. He saw it fitting to take a rock and pour oil on it. You know, if someone just told you that out of the blue, how stupid would that sound? Never mind that. If someone told you that, not out of the blue. If you, in any case, if you heard that, unless God specifically said in the Bible somewhere, you know what really makes me happy? When you take a rock and pour oil on it, there's something about that. I love it. Love it. Ah, so stupid. So stupid. This is just the dumbest book. Again, I did not write this. I'm telling you, I didn't write it. Verse 19. And he called the name of that place Bethel. But the name of that city was called Luz at the first, because that's important. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me, and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat, and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. So first of all, he's making a deal with God. He's saying, he's doing that thing. I think that religious people would hate this idea if they read, I don't know if they read this, maybe they don't even read this book, but so he's making a deal. So if you do this, God, then okay, you'll be my God, I guess. If you fulfill all these conditions. No, they don't like that. And also, I love this idea that he's going to give God back 10% of what God gives him. So if someone gives you money or something for Christmas, do you give them 10% back? Does that make sense? Usually when someone gives you something, it's because they wanted you to have it. You know, maybe you give them a gift back or something later, but you don't turn around and divvy out 10% of what they just gave you and give it right back to them. God's probably a little pissed at all the re-gifting that he's been doing all these years. Also, how does he give it back? How do you give money to God? How do you give anything to God? You know, does he have like a P.O. box or what? How does that work? Do you just cut him a check? What bank does God use? Does God use a bank? What money does... Oh, I get it. You keep the money, and then you do what God thinks... what you think God would want you to do with it, and then you're giving it to God. Oh, okay. I get it. Stupid. Okay, on to chapter 29. Alrighty, this is one of those chapters that it's so stupid on its own that it's... You know, to be honest, it's going to be hard to add anything to it that'll do anything. We got a lot to cover today. I might try to sort of get through it, but I'll do my best to add whatever jokes I can. It's pretty bad, though. All right. Then Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. And he looked, and behold, a well in the field. And lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. And thither were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone. Now it took me a while. And they rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep. They use so many pronouns that don't refer to anything. At first, I actually thought Jacob was talking to the sheep, because it goes on. It says, "And watered the sheep and put the stone again at the well's mouth in his place." And Jacob said unto them, and no one has been mentioned but the sheep. They haven't said, and there's some shepherds there. It's just all been about the sheep. And Jacob said unto them, my brethren, because he's a fellow sheep, whence be ye? So it took me a while to realize that I guess there's just some implied shepherds going on there. I don't know. We can only assume. Who knows? With how crazy this book has been, it would not be the least bit surprising if he actually talked to the sheep. I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, and Jacob said unto them, the implied shepherds, "My brethren, whence be ye?" And they said, "Of Haran are we." And he said unto them, "Know ye Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he said unto them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep." And he said, "Lo, it is yet high day. Neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep, and go and feed them." And they said, "We cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep." And while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So, by the way, Jacob and Rachel, who, in case you didn't see it coming, are going to end up together, are actually first cousins. They're most definitely first cousins. But by biblical standards, that's probably the least related anyone has ever been, because it started off with just two people, you know, Adam and Eve. So everyone is brother and sister, then, but you know. So first cousins is probably pretty good by that metric. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice, and he wept. This put a funny image in my mind. He kissed Rachel, lifted up his voice, and wept. So he's... I suppose he's trying to woo Rachel, but he kisses Rachel and then he goes, "Ah!" And then he weeps and then he cries. Like, how bizarre of of an event that must have been. Boo. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. And it came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and embraced him, and kissed him, and brought him to the house, and he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely thou art my bone and flesh." And he abode with him the space of a month. And Laban said unto Jacob, "Because thou art my brother, shouldst thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be?" So just to try to keep up that recap, Jacob went to where he thought these people would be. There are sheep, there are shepherds. Rachel came, and Rachel and Jacob went back to Laban. They explained their family, and now Laban is asking Jacob, "Since you're my relative, you shouldn't be a slave, so how much should I pay you?" And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel and said, "I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter." You know, if it were me, I probably would have started a little lower than that. I'm not sure where he got 7 years. And also, maybe he was... maybe he was just being sort of metaphorical, like, "Oh man, I would serve you 7 years for Rachel." And Laban calls him out on it. He's like, "All right, okay." But I would have started, if I were Jacob, I probably would have said, "Man, I would serve you for, I would serve you for like a week for Rachel." Just like anything you could imagine. You know, go from there. You started a week, maybe Laban gets it up to, you know, a month. He's not going to go, he's not going to instantly go, "Nope, 15 years. 2 years. 9 years." Yeah, you know, like that's, I think if he had started more at like a week, it would have been fine. Oh, I love this scratchy thing that my recording thing loves to do. Okay, there, I fixed it again. It's funny, it's like clockwork. Except it doesn't tell me the time, it just goes... Okay, so anyway. And Laban said, "It is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man." Well, you know, good reasoning. Also, yeah, you just give your daughters to people. That's how it works back then. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days, for the love he had to her. And Jacob said unto Laban, Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. My favorite biblical phrase. And why... Why do you tell her dad that? I think we were fine before that little phrase. We were fine at, give me my wife for my days are fulfilled. We're fine, period. Just put a period there. No, but there's a comma. That I may go in unto her. Laban's like, don't tell me what you're going to do to her. Leave that to yourself. Plus, what did Jacob think that Laban thought he was going to do to her? And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. And it came to pass, as it always does, in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought Leah, not Rachel, and brought her to him. And he went in unto her. He, I hope, referring to Jacob, not Laban, because that would be weird. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah, his maid, for an handmaid. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, What is this thou hast done unto me? Did I not serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? And Laban said, It must not so be done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. So Laban's a complete dick. It's pretty obvious. He probably could have told Jacob this, 3 years ago? 3 years before this? 4 years? Five? How about 7 years? How about right when they made the arrangement? Like, sure, work 7 days for Rachel, but I'm gonna have to marry you to Leah, provided no one else takes her first, because I can't, you can't marry the younger one before the older one. And then, they could have worked something out, rather than just, withhold that information until the day of the wedding day, and then just, sneak it in. So that's pretty shady. Fulfill her week, which I looked up means the week of celebration during a marriage. Fulfill her week, referring to Leah, Jacob unto Leah, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. And Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel his daughter to wife also. So Laban was really just trying to deal his other daughter. He's like, man, I gotta get rid of this one. It's the first 2-for-1 deal. That's pretty cool. And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. How did the daughters feel about this? Does it say? No, it doesn't say. Although it does sort of lead to other consequences later. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah. And he served with him yet another 7 years. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb. But Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bare a son. And she called his name Reuben. For she said, Surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, Because the Lord hath heard I was hated, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. And she conceived again, and bare a son, and said, Now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore his name was called Levi. And she conceived again, and bare a son. And she said, I am on a freaking roll, is what she said. But also she said, Now I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah and left bearing. So that's the end of the chapter. So it's pretty obvious that this thing in the end here, where it says the Lord saw that Leah was hated and opened her womb, it's pretty obvious that this is just an attempt to make some sort of sense of the fact that, shit happens, as they say. So, let me illustrate it thusly. We have a few options here, as we always do. I kind of like this one, this particular method. We have a few options here. You tell me which is more likely. Option 1. This is my option. Just so happened that for whatever reason, Rachel had difficulty conceiving, whereas Leah didn't. perfectly normal, everyday occurrence, especially back then when they didn't understand, you know, women's cycles and how that worked and really how pregnancy worked. You know, they didn't really understand any of that. So it's perfectly conceivable. This probably happens every day that you have trouble conceiving. Certainly, I have my brother and sister both have children now, and they've sort of talked about how it actually is more difficult than it seems. there's sometimes a trial period where things don't quite work out. So that's perfectly normal, perfectly conceivable. Or option two, God saw that Jacob didn't like Leah as much, and rather than A, having stopped Laban from forcing Leah upon Jacob in the first place, you know, rather than counteracting this whole thing in the first place, which is ridiculous, and rather than B, just miraculously inspiring Jacob to love Leah a little more, which wouldn't also have been hard, or, you know what, he's an all-powerful, all-seeing, all-knowing God. He could have just made Leah a little better looking in the first place to avoid this whole thing. Nope, rather than doing those two things, instead of either of those, he decides to even things out by bringing children into the loveless marriage, since we all know that's an instant fix, and keeping children out of the more loving marriage. All Jacob wanted to do was marry Rachel in the first place. Is it Rachel or Jacob's fault that this happened? It seems obvious that option one is much more likely, since option two makes God a complete idiot. Or just a bungler, you know, just the stupidest being. This Bible, seems to consist of a multitude of these dichotomies where the just unchallenged, accepted assumption is always option two. Do you notice that? Always seems to be the case. And as a result, God looks like he's a complete idiot in these things. And, you know, this is to be expected. Coming from an atheistic point of view, if you look at all the stupid crap that happens in the world, because it's true, just weird crap happens every day. A million tales of injustice and things that shouldn't have gone the right way and all this. If you assigned a personality to all that, of course that person would seem like an idiot. They'd seem like they had no idea what was going on, which is exactly what we find here. God seems like a complete idiot. All right, moving on to chapter 30. So going into this chapter, I was thinking about it, and I've realized it's really easy to get desensitized to how ridiculous this all is. I mean, I'm making fun of it, but in a way, I've also started, I'm kind of adapting to what I'm reading. And things that it just mentions casually in here are absolutely unthinkable to us nowadays. They start to sound normal. And I was thinking about it, and I really, we need to do our best to try to keep up our sensitivity. And the reason is this, and I think I'm probably going to write something about this too, on a site that I'll advertise soon. But this is my, just quick, the little proof I have in my mind about this. God is supposedly eternal, and, religious morals are supposedly eternal. And I find it really ironic that religious people criticize atheism. If you look at, I listen to and watch a lot of religion debates. They always criticize atheism because they assume that we can't have any absolute morals. But yet they read the Bible and think, oh, you know, when you bring up the Old Testament, they'll think, oh, well, things were different back then. You know, it's a different time. That's, you know, things were more acceptable. Like, for instance, slavery has been casually mentioned this in, you know, multiple times throughout this book so far, and we're only on chapter nothing. Women are treated as objects. They're given away. We would never do that now. We being the morally enlightened of this earth. Still happens some places, but... there's polygamy. And I didn't even mention the polygamy. I mean, I talked about it, but I didn't mention the polygamy in the last chapter because it just sort of... I'm desensitized to it. It's like, oh yeah, this is a stupid Bible. That's what happened. But I need to not get desensitized. And none of this is condemned. None of this behavior is condemned by God or by anyone. And these are the chosen children of God that are doing these things, not just some outsiders or something like that. So the behavior, my point is, if different times allow for different moral values, then how can religion even say it offers absolute morals? There's no, it can't. By definition, absolute morals would have to apply at all times to everything. And they certainly didn't apply now, and God didn't seem to trouble himself with it. So with that in mind, get ready for some awesome freaking polygamy in this chapter. This chapter is pretty much an orgy in print. So, get ready for that. And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" And she said, "Behold, my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her." And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. Went in unto her. And Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And somehow this was good for Rachel. And Rachel said, "God hath judged me and hath heard my voice and hath given me a son." Yeah, given her a son. Therefore she called his name Dan. Dan. And Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, I really just needed the one. I wasn't looking for." And Jacob said, I'm sorry, my mistake. I misunderstood. I thought she just wanted me to keep entering in unto her over and over. Was that not? Okay, so I should stop then, I guess? Okay. No, I got it. I got it now. Consider it stopped. And Rachel said, "With great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister." Great language. "And I have prevailed." And she called his name Naphtali. Yeah, because this is more points for Rachel, that she's able to give her husband someone else to have children. When Leah saw that she had left bearing, which I guess means she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob to wife. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a son. And Leah said, "A troop cometh." And she called his name Gad. G-A-D, Gad. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son. And Leah said, "Happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed." And she called his name Asher. Wow, they are really taking sisterhood rivalry to just an entirely new level. It's interesting. And Reuben went in the days of wheat and harvest, and found mandrakes in the field, whatever those are. Adam Clark doesn't even know what those are, actually. And brought them unto his mother Leah. Unto? Ooh. They go unto somebody? To a woman? I mean, same word they use for the other thing they talk about. I wonder what these mandrakes are. I gotta get a hold of some. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes." And she said unto her, "Is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband? And wouldst thou take away my son's mandrakes also? First my husband, then my son's mandrakes." And Rachel said, "Therefore he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes." So they're both married to him, yet Rachel can make the deal. "Look, okay, I want some of your son's mandrakes, so how about if I have our husband lie with you tonight? Good? Consider it even? You know, call it a wash?" And Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, "Thou must come in unto me, for surely I have hired thee with my son's mandrakes." And he lay with her that night. And Jacob said, essentially, okay. Yeah, all right. Whatever. Not much through all this. There's never much protest from Jacob in all this. I wonder why that is. You never hear Jacob complaining, you know? Like, no, I couldn't do that to you, my love, my wife, whom I love. No. Never any of that. And God hearkened unto Leah, and she conceived, and bare Jacob the fifth son. And Leah said, God hath given me my hire, because I have given my maid to my husband. And she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again, and bare Jacob the sixth son. And Leah said, God hath endued me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulun. And afterwards she bare a daughter, and called her name Dinah. And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her, and opened her womb. And she conceived, and bare a son, and said, God hath taken away my reproach. Whose side is God on in this whole thing, by the way? Seems more likely that God is not having any of it, and it's just random chance whether they're mating or not. Successfully, that is. And she called his name Joseph, and said, The Lord shall add to me another son. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, Send me away, that I may go unto mine own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done thee. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thy eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. And he said, Appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. And he said unto him, Thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me. For it was little which thou hadst before I came, and it is now increased unto a multitude. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. And now when shall I provide for mine own houses also? And he said, What shall I give thee? And Jacob said, Thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy flock. I will pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before thy face. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. And Laban said, Behold, I would it might be according to thy word. So just a quick recap. This is pretty confusing, and it gets more confusing. Jacob wants to leave, and Laban says, No, I'll stay, because Jacob, I guess, has some sort of talent for something, so he's made Laban much more rich. And so Laban wants him to stay, and he says, What can I give you for you to stay? And Jacob says, No, I don't want to stay, but if you want to give me something, give me all the goats that are speckled and all. So it's basically the speckled goats and speckled sheep. And Laban agrees. But it gets kind of fuzzy here, and I'll elaborate later. So Laban removed that day the goats that were ring-straked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and every one that had come right in it, that had some right in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them unto the hand of his sons. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. And Jacob took him rods of green poplar, and of the hazel and chestnut tree, and pilled white strakes in them, and made the white appear which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had pilled before the flocks in the gutters of the watering troughs when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. And the flocks conceived before the rods, and brought forth cattle, ring-straked, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob did separate the lambs, and set the faces of the flocks toward the ring-straked, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves, and put them not unto Laban's cattle. And it came to pass, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in, so the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. And the man increased exceedingly, and had much cattle and maidservants and men servants and camels and asses. And that's the end of the chapter. So basically, they agree that all the spotted sheep and goats, spotted or striped or both, would be Jacob's. So what he did is he made rods that were striped or spotted and held them in front of the lamb, of a lamb that was mating, and that made it produce a spotted lamb. You know, that's one of the reasons the Bible is so revered, is because of the alarmingly accurate scientific predictions it made. To this day, it's absolutely true that if you show a lamb a spotted rod while it's mating, they'll have spotted offspring. It's just one of those things. Oh, wait, no, that's actually complete bullcrap. That's never mind. I'm thinking of something else. Just like when they're looking at the sky, they'll have blue offspring, and when they're looking at some poo, they'll have poop instead of offspring, and that's how it works. That's how science works, man. I love how awkward this must have been for the sheep too. Jacob's on the prowl. He's got his rods in his hand. His rods, not his rod. He's got his rods in his hand. He's like, oh, those ones are doing it. Okay, quick, better go stand right in front of them, show them these rods. The lamb's like, do you mind? My wife and I here are trying to have sex. If you could just take all those rods you have and get them out of my face, that would really help us in the process. Thanks. So that's probably how that went for the sheep. So it basically seems like Jacob's a shyster. He finds it time and time again. He sort of dupes people out of stuff and tricks people, and it's really weird. And this chapter basically boggles the mind. Even Adam Clark, the commentary that I read, just to get a little bit more exposure to different religious points of view on the Bible, even he admits it. This is actually a direct quote about the mysteries that even he acknowledges are in this chapter. Quote, "I have given the best sense I could, and think it much better and safer to confess ignorance than under the semblance of wisdom and learning to multiply conjectures." So basically, the best way for a religious person to deal with the Bible not making any sense is to just say, whatever. What are you going to do? It's the Bible. That about sums it up. That about sums up my view of how stupid this book is. It's just, all you can do is either not read it or read it and say, whatever. It's just lots of good stuff in it. It's just some stuff doesn't make any sense. And that's stupid. If it's written by God, then it all should make perfect sense. It should be the most amazing book in the history of the world. And it's just not. It's not even close. So, with that, let's move on to chapter 31. All right, again, this is going to be probably a long podcast, and this is a long chapter. I'm going to try to get mostly just through it so we can put this behind us. "And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto thy land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee." So that's pretty convenient. Just when Jacob needs some sort of reason to leave, the Lord comes to him and he says, "Hey, you know, you should probably get out of here. Go back to the land of your fathers." Yeah, there's no chance that Jacob just made that up. No chance. No chance. "And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, and his 90 other wives and children, to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me," so he's justifying this, "and changed my wages 10 times, 10 times, changed his wages 3 times, but 10 times, sure. But God suffered him not to hurt me. And if he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled, And if he said, thus the ringstraked shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ringstraked. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. No, I'm pretty sure that you did that. You were the one who did that weird stick thing to make them give birth to... Well, you know what? Actually, he has a point. That makes no sense that that would happen, so I guess it must have been God. And it came to pass, as it always does, at the time that the cattle conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ring-straked, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob! And I said, here am I. And he said, lift up now thine eyes, and see, all the rams which leap unto the cattle are ring-straked, speckled, and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I don't remember this exchange at the time, but now Jacob's saying this happened. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointedst the pillar, where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. So they're further justifying it. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. And Jacob rose up, and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle, and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting, which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. What a weird, stupid sentence. He stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. Oh, okay, so that's why it was unawares, because he didn't tell him. Yeah, because you needed to say that. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward the Mount Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled, and he took his brethren with him, and pursued him after 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night, and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. Either good or bad. So just don't talk to him or say neutral things like, that house is blue. Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the Mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what hast thou done, that thou hast stolen away unawares to me, and carried away all my daughters as captives taken with a sword? So that's a pretty good recap right there, but basically, yeah, Jacob went away and took everything, and also a minor detail is that Rachel stole some images of Laban's. I don't know what those are, what that means, but they're images, it said. So then Laban eventually caught up with him, and here we are. Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp? And hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and daughters. Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt, but the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And now... Thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest... Putting the ST after all these past tenses is so weird. DST. Pronounce that, would you? After thy father's house. Yet wherefore hast thou stolen my goods? And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent. And so basically Jacob was saying, I haven't stolen anything. If you find anything that's yours, you can take it. because he didn't know about Rachel's images. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. Uh-oh. And Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me." And he searched, but found not the images. This this is the greatest thing ever. Gosh, it's so awesome. So basically she said, "Oh, father, I'd totally get up. I know you're searching the whole tent and everything. I'd get up, but I'm on my period." And the father's like, sit down, stay down. Don't even get up. Oh, don't get up. You know, he didn't. Nowadays, the father would be like, okay. Anyway, can you get up so I can look for the crap that I think you stole? But no, that it's so horrible back then. And I love the language, "for the custom of women is upon me." Because it's a custom among women. That's all your period is, women. It's just a custom, you know. Why don't you all just up and decide not to have that custom anymore? Custom. It's customary among women. Ah, so good. And Jacob was wroth and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou find of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beasts I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. Thus I have been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle." So one daughter was worth 7 years. Cattle were worth 6 years. Man. So cattle are just 1 year away from a woman. That's how good cattle are, I guess. "And thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Again, 3 times. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, had been with me. Surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God hath seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight," referring to the dream Laban had. "And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, These daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto the children which they have borne? Now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou." So Laban's basically... So Jacob pretty much made his case, said, "All this stuff you've done, that I've done for you." And now it looks like Laban's kind of giving in and agreeing. "Let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee." And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made an heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jeger Sahadutha. But Jacob called it Gilead. Because Jeger Sahadutha is probably the worst name anyone's ever thought of. So it went, Laban said, he was trying to be all, you know, big and like, you know, commemorate. Laban said, "We shall call this place Jeger Sahadutha." Or whatever. No, that's just a thought. You know, what if, you know, if you think of something else, I'm just sort of brainstorming. Jacob says, how about Gilead? Laban's like, yeah, okay. No, that works. You sure not Jager said? No, never mind. Gilead's better. You're right. Love that little bit. Little details they add in here. So fun. And Laban said, This heap is a witness between me and thee this day, because heaps make great witnesses. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed, because the other name sucked it. And Mizpah, for he said, The Lord watch between me and thee, when we are absent from one another. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take otherwise besides my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said to Jacob, Behold this heap! Behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness. Two great witnesses, heaps and pillars. That I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me, for harm. The God of Abraham, and the God of Nahor, and the God of their father, judge betwixt us. And Jacob sware by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount, and called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread, and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up, and kissed his sons and his daughters, and blessed them. And Laban departed, and returned unto his place. So Jacob made sacrifice, and unfortunately for God, oh man, God was on step 11 of the 12-step sacrifice addiction program. He was so close. But with this, he fell right back off the wagon. Probably went something like this. He's God's around, and he says, look. They're sacrificing something. Okay. Oh man. Go back to literature. Okay, what's step 11? Seek God through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand Him. Oh, come on! That's not going to help me, damn it! Okay, I can do this. Come on, God, you can do this. You're better than this. You don't need the sacrifice. Oh, maybe just a little whiff, just a little smell. Oh, they have deer. Oh, God. Oh, they have deer. Oh, me instead of God. Oh, me. Well, come on, it would be, who would I be if I refused a gift like that? I mean, they did it for me. I don't see any other God they're sacrificing to. Maybe just a little, you know, just a little bit of sacrifice. And just like that, God's right back to step one. You know, where does God even find a sponsor? That's gotta be tough for him. I don't know where he's gotta go. The devil? I don't know. Somebody. The Holy Ghost, I forgot. You know, I had to bring the Holy Ghost back. I forgot about that whole thing. So, that was a long one, sorry, but it makes up for the last one, which is short, just the way the chapter's divided. I don't want to cut it off mid-chapter, but sometimes some are a little longer than others. So, that's it, and as usual, send questions to comments at thomasinthebible.com. Questions, comments, death threats, life threats. I'll get to them one of these days. And I'll read them, and it'll be fun. So, with that, see you tomorrow.